If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56diva.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
Time for This Week in Chicago History with Anna DeVlantis, and we'll start this morning by going back to 1995. And Anna, I forgot all about the Chicago connection to the Unabomber.
The Unabomber, Bob. It was, you know, you think about it, such a dark story that captured the nation's attention for years. He was doing it for 17 years, but deep Chicago connections. The Unabomber was from Evergreen Park, Ted Kaczynski. He had an extremely high IQ, went to Harvard at the age of 16 on a full ride, and got a PhD from Michigan. This week, 1995, Bob, he sent a 55-page manifesto to the FBI and major news organizations saying, you know what, if you print this, go ahead, print my manifesto, and I'll stop sending homemade bombs through the mail. Essentially, I'll stop killing people. So it would put them in a real quandary thinking about what to do. His first bomb, by the way, was sent to UIC, this time in 1978, addressed to a professor. It got routed to a security guard who opened it and was injured but did not die. Ted Kaczynski then got one of his bombs onto an outbound flight out of Chicago, flight 444. Again, it was enough to create smoke in the cabin, but it did not bring the plane down, thankfully. So then he sent one to the United Airlines CEO in Lake Forest, and there are a lot of people who were targeted locally. The FBI called him the Unabomber, actually, because he was targeting universities and airlines initially. But he kept going, and here we were 17 years in, and the FBI didn't seem to know who this guy was. So here's a clip we pulled. One of the senior FBI agents on discussing about the decision to print the manifesto as their way to hopefully get the break they needed.
It worked, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. Ted's brother, in fact, came forward immediately recognizing some of the writing style, some of the references. He contacted the FBI, and they found Ted in that remote cabin in Montana, sentenced to many, many years. He committed suicide a couple years ago, but they found him, and the killings stopped at that moment.
Now we go back 23 years ago to a sad event at Wrigley Field. I remember watching this game. I remember turning the game on and wondering what was going on because play had stopped. Tell us about this, Anna.
You know, a lot of people who were there at Wrigley, too, were sort of wondering, what's going on? This is so weird. It was game time, and the whole mood of the ballpark completely shifted because the game was abruptly canceled, and very little explanation. Then Cubs catcher Joe Girardi, visibly shaken, steps up to a microphone at Wrigley Field, and he made this very memorable and moving announcement to the crowds at Wrigley.
Joe Buck with that terrible announcement, June 22nd, 2002.
Yeah, it later communicated, Bob, that Daryl Kyle had died of an undiagnosed heart condition at the age of 33. Just a tragic day and a sad day at the ballpark. But many people remember how Joe Girardi handled that. Just a really heartfelt thing, the way he did it with respect, given the sudden situation of that news.
Right. He really stepped up, and he had to that day. Well, the 4th of July holiday around Chicago is very historic and kind of a double holiday, isn't it?
Okay, Bob, I don't understand why we don't celebrate this as a double holiday, like double the fireworks or double the fun or something. But this is really interesting because July 4th, 1909 is huge for Chicago. It is the date when Daniel Burnham put out his bold plans for the future of the city. This is when he unveiled them, and he chose the day purposefully because he wanted it to create like a patriotic vision and instill unity and pride, civic pride across the city. So he said, July 4th is when I'll reveal my plans for the city. He was already this hero because he had done the White City at during the World's Fair. He had executed that so well. And here he was with 164-page, lavishly illustrated book about the view of what Chicago will be in the future. And it was pretty much all, it all got executed. He was building green space across neighborhoods, preserving the lake. lakefront for public use, creating a city grid, major public transit rail lines and, you know, freight lines and separating them, creating a city grid and all the things we've come to appreciate about the way our city was built. Make no little plans is what he said, and his plans were gargantuan. It was huge. And just a cool thing to think about. This is way before urban planning was even a thing. So lots of other cities also covered the news of what Chicago was doing and kind of followed suit, you know, kind of interesting.
Yeah,
July 4th. If
you go to the lakefront over the weekend and you're enjoying the open space, just thank Daniel Burnham for that. Other cities, yeah, have the trash dumps and power plants along the lakefront, but not ours. We have a pristine lakefront, thanks to Daniel Burnham. Who was that masked Chicago man, Anna?
Yeah, it's so interesting, Bob. I guess I didn't know this one. Maybe a lot of folks did. But he was a Chicagoan, the Lone Ranger. This week in 1949, Clayton Moore got his big break and was cast as the Lone Ranger. He was a Senn High School grad and totally on his way to stardom at this moment when that happened, jumping on his white horse Silver and fighting for justice in the Wild West with loyal Tonto by his side. Interesting backstory, Bob. You know, Clayton Moore got his start as an acrobat during the 1933 World's Fair at age 8. That's how he kind of started in the show business world and it was instant stardom when he got this part. Biggest show on TV at the time, one of them, and he went on to star in 2 feature films as the Lone Ranger as well, including this Warner Brothers picture in 1956.
You know what? I will never forget when I was doing Chicago Tonight over at WTGW. Uh-huh. Clayton Moore came to Chicago for an appearance, and we met up with him on the north side. We went to the apartment building where he grew up. He was in full costume, and we knocked on the door, and this woman opens the door, and there's the masked man with a holster and gun. And I've got to find that videotape. I've got it somewhere at home.
Did she freak out?
Pretty much, yeah. We quickly explained what was going on. It wasn't a holdup. It wasn't a robbery. But Clayton Moore was definitely a North Sider.
Yeah, and he came back so many times for appearances, too, which was awesome. Never forgot his hometown and lots of... That is such a fun story, though, Bob, that he he dressed up for you for Chicago.
Yeah, he was making a personal appearance or something, so he was in full Lone Ranger attire. Let's talk about something that I'd never heard of. You mm-hmm. think of bootlegs, bootleggers and bootlegging and, you know, booze, but margarine? Really?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because it's forever associated. Bootlegging in Chicago kind of go hand in hand in the movies and the gangster stuff. But back in 1911, there was a thing as margarine. Margarine was banned, and there was margarine bootleggers out there. Chicago did not allow it. The dairy industry had convinced city officials that margarine needed to be regulated, citing the Food and Drug Act, which stated that it was a processed food that could be contaminated, that plants need to be inspected regularly, and you need to pay an excise tax if you were going to be selling it. So this week in Chicago history, 1911, 6 margarine salesmen were busted for selling margarine. And it was interesting because one of them made the mistake of selling to an inspector's wife, and that's how they got caught. Oops. But Chicago papers called them the margarine moonshiners. And the penalties were huge, though. They were put away for 18 months, Bob. They had to serve 18 months each just for selling margarine. How about that?
Amazing.
Pretty crazy.
And finally, we have the history of one of our favorite Chicago billboards, don't we?
Still around today, Brian Urlacher's hair billboards. You know, you see them all the time on the major expressways. And this week in 2015, it was kind of interesting if you go back and think about it, how they launched this whole campaign. Pretty smart, if you think about it, because this week in Chicago history, 2015, Brian Urlacher secretly completed his hair transplants, turning his signature dome into a full head of hair. But he didn't tell anybody for months, except immediate family, of course. And, you know, his wife loved it, he said. But he wore a ball cap when he was out in public, and he really worked hard to keep it a total secret because he had cut this deal with the company, Restore, that there was supposed to be a big reveal. And that was going to coincide with the rollout of the billboards and the ad campaign and this major media blitz. So we pulled this great clip, Brian Urlacher showing up on the WGN TV Morning News, debuting his new hair and just freaking everybody out.
Pat Tamasulo with Brian. Yeah. I thought Brian looked fine without any hair.
I did, too. I think everyone just grew to love him looking like that. That was his signature look. And then think back how the reaction was at the time in the city. Like, oh, I don't know. I don't like it. I don't like The whole town was buzzing and talking about it. And because of that, you know, sales doubled and that company went on to do pretty well with the whole Brian Urlacher endorsement thing.
Well, whatever they paid him, it was worth it,
wasn't
enough.
Yeah.
Anna DeBlantis, more This Week in Chicago History next Wednesday. Thanks, Anna.
Sure, Bob.